Well, welcome everybody. Thank you for being here. I know it's kind of a tough after lunch. I don't seem to get a break when it comes to my time. I either I'm scheduled before lunch or right after lunch. So anyway, today I'm going to talk about the versioning of the digital soil mapping approach to the global soilmap.net specifications. This is a part of a larger effort that it's being conducted at a global scale and that is partitioned into nodes roughly corresponding to continents. The list of authors here are, most of them are present, so I'll probably continue without any further introduction. As I said, this effort is organized in nodes. These are the centers of the nodes for each continent that are responsible for conducting generating this predictive digital soil maps in a raster format, and I will get to that in more detail as to what to this map are made of and what properties. Today I'll talk more about the North American node. Here is the partners at the continental level, USA represented by NRCS at the continental level, with Canada by agriculture and agri-food, and then Mexico, or most recently, joined the effort. Then within the US, we have partners, mostly universities that are working, and they all bring their strengths. Purdue University brings the terrain mapping into the digital mapping. Utah State brings a lot of remote sensing, which is very relevant for the Western lands that are pretty much relying on satellites, and they are very useful for predicting soils. And then we have University of Florida, which has some strengths as far as the geospatial and geostatistics, and then West Virginia University, which is the host of two postdoc positions that are solely dedicated to the global soil map. Here is the Team USA, starting from left to right, all the members. And this is a photo shoot, and we're pretending like we're really serious there, and I'm the only one that probably believe that this is just a photo op. And it's kind of a funny because we are in a boat near sailing in the Lago Maggiore, and it's hard to concentrate when you have such a beautiful landscape around you. This effort is not new in terms of the attempts to generate global soil maps of certain properties. Here is one effort by the Harmonized World Soil Database that has been led by the FAO. However, the issue with this is that it's a very coarse scale and there is an urgent need to have more detailed soil property maps at finer scales. So the goals of this project are to create this predictive soil property maps for the entire world at a 90 meter pixel, and that is chosen because of the SRTM data that's available almost for the entire globe. And the major soil properties that the global soil map is charged with are, as you'd expect, organic carbon, soil pH, the particle size distribution with all its fragments, and then derived properties, the bulk density, which is important because it relates directly to the organic carbon estimates, and then available water capacity and some other optional secondary properties, ECC and EC, which are related sometimes to the fertility. So it's trying to encompass some different aspects of the uses that we can get from generating properties, property maps at this scale. And they are, of course, to be generated at standard depths, six standard depths listed. So the basic idea is to move from the traditional soil polygon maps that we have currently that provide profiles, but they provide mean values for a specific thickness or a specific horizon. The idea is to move from this sort of a map to a more sort of a continuous map based on rasters, and also using this smoothing functions to be able to generate properties and that will sort of give us the ability to predict or have property values for all the depths across the profile. And the fourth dimension is, of course, time, being able to generate this in time and update this continuously as the data becomes available. Here is sort of a more detailed description of what this concept is about. These are well-known issues as far as the polygons and raster maps, and we seem to be comfortable with polygon maps, and Edwin and I were having a discussion yesterday. It was sort of on philosophical terms. Why we sort of identify ourselves, or sometimes have such an easy time to identify things that are sort of clear and crisp, and always have a hard time with fuzzy boundaries when we all also know that in nature things are fuzzy. And so our conclusion was that it has to do with survival, probably. We as a species like to see things clear. We don't like fuzzy things coming at us because we don't know what they are. And that's a speculation anyway. So, but in speaking of humans, there are some people from our species that maybe like to be fuzzy, and you can probably have and talk to politicians, and they can be as fuzzy as they want. But the major point in this is that these polygon maps are sort of a crisp boundaries again, and they offer sometimes ranges, as you can see, and they don't have any indication as far as what's the spatial distribution of these ranges. And so they are simple in terms of representation of the reality, but they are complex when it comes to interpretations because of the ranges. On the other hand, rasters may look to be complex because you have all these numbers for all the pixels, but they are very simply they are simple to interpret and also easy to query and do analysis. So then the third dimension is the spline, of course, and this is work that has been done in the past, and I think there are some more coming from Australia. They have been very successful in fitting splines in these profiles and being able then to generate estimates of properties for the entire depth of 200 centimeters at 1 centimeter interval. So for the North American node, after recognizing that we have some variety of databases that we have to work with, there was a long discussion among us as to what approach to take, realizing that it's going to take a while before we can generate these property maps at the global soil map specifications. So we came up with this idea of versioning, as explained here, and basically the versions 0.1 to 0.4 are simply gridded maps, which are no different from polygon maps. They're just rasterized. So in that, in terms of what they're offering, they're not offering that much. However, when we generate them, the benefit of it is that we can highlight issues that we may have with these products as we generate them, and also we can also prove the concept to people that yes, we can do it, but on the other hand, provide some opportunities for things to be improved. Then the next version would be again using the same approach, gridding them, but using more detailed surveys and filling in the gaps with more coarser scale maps. Then, of course, versions 1 and plus would be continuous grid raster property maps that will also hopefully have uncertainty values attached to them, which is one of the major points of contention when it comes to the legacy data. So we hope that we'll be able to address that. So as I said, these are the major properties that we have been able to work using the approach that we just explained, using gridded circle and running the splines. As far as the pH, there is a poster, as Jim explained, that sort of it's relating to this pH study. The reason we had to conduct that was because the global soil map requires that we have maps at 1 to 5 pH, yet our routine analyses are done on 1 to 2 calcium chloride and 1 to 1 water, so we had to sort of develop a relationship. We took advantage of the fact that we had a lot of repository samples in the lab at Lincoln, and we were able to pull them and conduct this study. If you want more details on that, you can go to that poster. Here's an example of one of the properties, silt content for the standard depths of a global soil map. And at this scale, it's sort of obvious. The patterns are obvious. You can see pretty much the Midwest that is it's high in loess, and that's due to the glaciations. And then you can see also loess in the northwest part, which is mostly related to the volcanic activities. Here is another one from Canada, produced with the same approach. And there are, of course, gaps, and we didn't have enough time to put them together so we can see discrepancies. But I think Nathan has been working with that, dealing with matching data between countries, and I'm not sure if he's going to talk about it, but there is a continuation effort. So as I said, the next step would be then to move from the polygon data to The next step would be to move from the polygon data to the harmonized database. And in order for us to move to the gridded continuous maps, we first have to harmonize the databases, the legacy data. Unfortunately, this is the only data we have available that we can start and use as a platform. But having said that, we know that there are issues with the data. And here are some of the issues that are listed. Jim had done a thorough analysis of identifying all the sources of why do we have this inconsistency in the data. And you'd expect this because you have a survey that has been conducted over 100 years, and you'd have a lot of things that change in the process. And you can see map units that sometimes have a lot of undifferentiated groups or are associations or they are complexes, and you can see county lines too. So before we get to that gridded raster maps, we need to address this issue for these reasons. And here's a closer look at one of the examples. You can look at the StatsGo map at this 1 to 250,000, it looks like a polygon map, not different. And you look at Sergo, it's more detailed, and probably it's better as far as the information detail, but it has these issues, the artifacts. And in the middle, you have this watershed that has been designed based on, the depth is being predicted based on terrain attributes, and it's a continuous map. At a closer look, you can see right away the issues. This is more sort of realistic as far as what it's out there. This is a dissected landscape. You can see losses on the summits, and you can see eroded areas, and then you can see loess deposits in the valleys. When you go to Sergo, the way it is represented, you can see right away the difference. This one is pretty much having the same value. So in order to do this, we're developing this MLRI approach, pilot projects first, when we're going to harmonize the data, and then we're going to go through these steps in order to generate the continuous property maps and hopefully come to the uncertainty and the validation. And we're going to use the PADON data for validation, recognizing also the fact that this PADON data are not quite independent from the data that we are using to make the property maps from the current databases. So where do we go from here? In short term, we're going to try to work more some methods. We'll continue to generate these properties, and then we're going to hopefully to be able to validate these maps. In the long term, we're going to be able to upscale this project from the MLRA to the global scale, and then attach, of course, the bottom line is to attach some dollar values and some things that would probably be more related to the functions that the soil provides for the society. And with that, I'm done. Oh, you could.
Really rich point cluster, yeah.
That is Indiana and Illinois. And it looks that it looks clustered, and you see that there's a lot of data points there, and that's a scale. This is at 1 to 17 million. But if you zoom into the Indiana, you will realize that you don't have enough data even to do some meaningful geostatistics. So we are still trying to figure out that and how to deal with it. That's one issue. The second one, is, as I mentioned, is the fact that the data is not quite independent. They have been used. This data has been used to refine and redefine the values in the Sergo data that we are now using to make the predictive map. So there's a sort of a circle.